Pickaxe.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Triforce podcast with me, Sips. Hello, Sips.
Hi.
And Pyrian Flax.
Hello.
It's a lovely sunny day outside. I can see I'm looking forward to going outside. Normally, I'd be streaming today, but I'm having a little bit of time off. And so I'm going to go and read my book outside. I've got a new book to read.
Right.
It's called Revenger. Apparently, it's like a bit of space pirates. It's Alistair Reynolds. I like him. I like space. I like pirates. So, and I like sunshine. So I'm going to put some suntan cream on.
Right.
I'm going to go outside. I'm going to lube myself up for the outside world. I'm going to bust out of my bubble.
Okay.
Nice.
I've been sat inside playing games all week and painting some Warhammer and building some Lego. I've been having a nice, chill, relaxing time.
Right.
I feel like a toddler, though, a little bit. Like, do you know what I mean? Or at least a teenager. Doing all the stuff I used to do when I was a teenager. But I'm having a good time. Mm. What about you guys? What you guys been doing this week?
I've been sitting inside and playing video games as usual all week long.
That's good stuff. You've been playing Death Stranding.
Yeah. I finished it.
Yeah, I saw. So did I, actually. And I really liked it. Somebody said to me beforehand, this game is quite relevant for the pandemic because everyone's trapped inside and they have to have their packages delivered to each other and they can't go outside because there's danger.
Yeah, there's been some similarities drawn to it.
But I wasn't convinced there were that many similarities.
Well, no, I mean, it's
beyond
just
the fact that everyone's like isolated in their little bunkers.
Yeah, and receives parcels in their little bunkers quite regularly from Amazon.
Originally, when I started playing Death Stranding, I thought that you were, because the sort of story sets it up like you're this really important kind of like lifeline to these people who couldn't survive without you, okay?
Yeah.
And then immediately they're like, I've got like a load of old tires or like just a load of literal shit that they don't even want. And they're like, can you just deliver this? There's one girl with a junk dealer who wants you to ship around like shit tons of junk.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck me. What? I'm supposed to be like this. I'm risking my life to carry like just old fucking, like, I don't know, chassis and crap around for you.
Yeah, but then,
oh, man.
But then he builds like good stuff with it though. So it's useful, right?
Mm. It's about rebuilding the connections between people, isn't it? Like I think that's it at its core.
Yeah.
It's like saying we won't really be humans again until we can fuck about with banal shit. Like that.
Right.
And
I
that
see.
Sort of is, otherwise, we're essentially just surviving. And that's not really the human experience at the moment. You know,
like we've reached a point. Karen can't possibly exist without her magazines. So you have to deliver a fucking magazines to her.
Right. So it makes her feel human again. And it restores that sort of, that boring everyday shit is what makes us able to enjoy life. Like if we just lived like we did when we were hunter gatherers. Apparently, though, hunter gatherers had a pretty sweet time of it. You gather for a few hours. Then you can just chill the rest
Hunt
of the day.
For a few hours.
Yeah, I wonder what they did.
Well, I think it's being purposeful, right? Like, and I think that is something that a lot of people don't have nowadays. You know what I mean? Like, especially in our society where like a lot of stuff is already taken care of for you, sort of thing. I think a lot of people feel like a disconnect on that level, right? They don't have any like tangible purpose or whatever. Like me, I just sit around and play video games all day. You know what I mean? And like, I'm fairly happy with that. But I don't know. Sometimes I think like, you know, it'd be pretty neat to have to go out and do something really important every day.
You know what? I was watching Seinfeld last night. That's funny you should mention that. Because they're all on like, I think it's on Amazon Prime or something. And I was watching some episodes. And there's one where George goes to get a job. And the guy says, well, I'd love to bring you on board. However, and then he goes, oh, let me take this call. And George is like, however what? Or, you know, did I get the job? And he never finds out. So he just turns up to work because the guy's gone on holiday. So he just turns up and says, yeah, I start today. They give him an office and they give him this file, the Penske file.
Right.
And I was like, wow, imagine having like an office and people coming to you and saying, here's some work we need you to do. And it's something I haven't done in such a long time.
Yeah.
And I've never had an office. And I was like, imagine having a job. Like, it was actually quite exciting, the idea of going to work and having colleagues and work and stuff.
I don't know if you remember much about being at work, but I remember specifically getting a lot of work given to me where I just thought, what is the fucking point of this?
Like, oh, yeah.
And you work on it for months. And it's just like, and you knew at the end of it, everybody's pulling in like all these hours, overtime, everything. Everybody's making a big deal of it. And you just knew at the back of your mind, like, this is going nowhere. Like,
yeah.
we will implement this or whatever. And right now, everybody's talking about it like it's going to be like a game changer, or like, you know, we're going to live in some new world when we're done or whatever. And a week after it's in, nobody will care about it, and it'll sit there and collect dust, and everybody will just go back to doing the same stuff that they always done. And nine times out of ten, that was true.
I knew straight away that I would be excited on my first day, and then the second day I'd be like, oh, I've got to go into work. Like,
yeah.
It was, you know what I mean? Like, I don't miss it, but in a weird way, I miss my ideal idea of what a job would be.
Yeah.
Where I can basically, I have some cool stuff I'm involved in. It's exciting and interesting, ever changing. That's not going to happen. Like you said, I've had jobs and it's just boring as shit.
Yeah.
You have to get up and go in. You sit there all your time. Even when you're bored to tears and you don't want to do it anymore, you still got to do it. It's like, it's a yoke.
I always figured that salespeople had the best time at jobs. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds like the worst because you always see like those, you know, like the those conventions for like door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesmen and stuff, and they always look really sad, right? They're always like these middle-aged
right.
men who just like act really silly and you know. But I think in terms of actual getting like tangible satisfaction from your job, it probably feels pretty good to sell stuff, right? It probably
feels
pretty
Especially
good to have a
commish.
Conversation with somebody, convince them to buy something. And then you put an order in and then you get a commission or you get paid for it. And it probably just feels like closer to like, you know, like a old world, like trading or being a merchant or something like that
right.
as you can
Especially
get.
Especially
right?
if what you're selling is good. If you're
yeah.
selling shit, that would suck. Like, you
Whereas,
feel bad.
Compared to like, say, working in like IT or something like, you know, behind the scenes or whatever. There's tangible work, yeah, but it's oftentimes it's not understood or appreciated, and usually it's instigated by people who don't know what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So your oversight in your work and stuff is never great, you know, because again, these
you have to deal with non-technical
it.
People a lot. The customer in general,
exactly, yeah,
has
yeah.
no idea what they're talking about or how it works.
Yeah,
it's frustrating,
and there's a huge disconnect between what you're doing and what the people who are trying to sell the service that you're creating are doing, because
yeah.
they're always looking for an angle or like some surefire way of, you know, getting somebody on board or whatever. And the whole time you're thinking, hang on a second, what you're describing isn't what we're doing, or, you know, you're just inventing stuff just to make it sound better or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
we were talking about Peter Molyneux yesterday on stream, actually. And people were like, I wasn't sure. I mean, I suspected Lewis or even Sips might have met him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm imagining.
Yeah, Lewis did. Yeah. He went down to the office, didn't
I've
he?
Met him a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think Peter Molyneux, if you want to talk about it, is just deluded, or do you think he's just a liar? Like, I felt that he's just caught up in the idea of, yeah, we could do all this cool stuff. And he pitches it as, yes, we can do it, but they just can't. And I worry that his devs at Lionhead or wherever they are now are sitting around thinking, oh, no, Peter, don't promise that. We can't do that. You know what I mean?
I honestly
wasn't sure which it was.
I don't think those characteristics are unique to him. I think that is a type of, usually like a designer or like a studio head will be very much like that, right? Like,
yeah.
will sort of like spin you that lifestyle dream yarn where you're like, you know, you get on board with it, you get hyped about it and stuff, and everybody thinks, oh, this is great, I'm really excited, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's saying all this stuff and like But then behind the scenes, you know, he goes back to his team and he's like, all right, guys, well, I've said we're going to do this. And they're like, yeah, we can't do that. And he's like, okay, well, let's not do that. We'll just do something else. You know what I mean? What he's saying at that moment is for that moment only.
I think there's like this massive combination of factors, right? Like, I think most bosses who set tasks that are usually done with the best of intentions. I'm sure there's some that they realize are a waste of time. But I don't think most people are going out there thinking, oh, I'm going to set this guy a thing which we know we're never going to use. You know, I think there's some, I've done it a lot in the office. I've built a lot of spreadsheets or I've built a lot of like resources for people and then no one has ever used them for anything, you know, and it's kind of, you know, you in your head when you start the project, you think, okay, this is going to save us a lot of time or this is going to be really handy. I think Peter Molyneux is someone who is this combination of factors that, first of all, I think he has a lot of yes men because he's got a lot of famous, you know, a lot of time he'll come to someone, he'll say, oh, can we do this? And the dev team will be like, sure, Peter, we could definitely do that. And then he sort of doesn't really follow that conversation through to its end and sort of then extrapolates out in his head what that means without like, he's a classic kind of ideas man.
He doesn't do the oversight part? So ideas, but not good at the follow through.
He's a dreamer, but he's good at selling his dreams. And that's what a lot of them are.
Yeah, well, because he believes in them. He genuinely is passionate and believes that these projects can be seen through. And I think that he has been a person who created a very amazing game in the original Fable. And then since then has been, I don't want to say let down by the teams that he's worked with, but certainly worked with teams who were unable to capture the vision that he originally intended. Whereas something like, I think, Death Stranding was this epic project that I think turned out amazing. It's like got really good AAA actors. It's got really good like core gameplay loop. It's got a crazy, wacky story, sure, but it's still got twists in it that, I don't know, it's just a real, real good game.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And I think that, you know, if we gave Peter Molyneux maybe the amount of budget that we gave Hideo Kojima, maybe he would have made something amazing. But I feel like he's always trying to, I don't know, make the Avengers Endgame on $5 and the local guy from down the road called Dave who's
I guess the thing is Kojima's made a ton of games that have made a ton of money.
So yeah, I mean, all the Metal Gear Solid and all the other stuff that he's done. I think it was kind of this thing where he sort of has, I think after the initial successes of his career, I think he went downhill. But I don't think he has bad intentions or is a liar necessarily. Right. I think he is passionate and excited about his projects, but ultimately isn't the person who is responsible for making that happen. I think he can run the project and kind of oversee it and assume, you know, be told by people that they can do it. Because that's what they say, isn't it? Yeah. You go to a job interview, like in Seinfeld, and they're like, Can you do this? And you're like, absolutely, I can do that. Because that's what you're told to say, isn't it? To get a job.
Sure.
In an interview. You know, it's like basic training. So if they ask you if you could do something, just say you can.
I think it's a little bit different with Kojima as well, because he built up like a big reputation off the back of really big games, but they were all of the same franchise, right? Like he's done other games, but he was with Konami for a long time. And the Metal Gear series just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, but there was like tons of games, right? Like there's like the, you know, like the ones that you know, right? Like you're like 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5, I guess, but there was lots of little spin-off games for other systems, like handheld games and all sorts of stuff. Like it was a really big franchise, right? And he dedicated a lot of time to it.
Well, I think that he, remember though, has the backing of Konami. What I'm saying is imagine that Hideo Kojima had done a project that had, you know, spectacularly flopped.
Yeah.
And then ever since, you know, I could see him being a Peter Molyneux character, this over-promising, odd kind of character who puts out these things that don't make any sense, you know.
But yeah,
it feels like Death Stranding was very close to being a bad game, but thanks to the money and effort and, I don't know, like just clearly a lot of brilliant people, not just him, you know.
Lots
I think it
of
came
people,
out like, to be a really cool game.
In the numerous credit sequences in the game, you'll see that there's hundreds and hundreds of people involved. Like it's a really big project. Like it's insane.
And I've been experiencing this recently because I think for the last few years, I've very much played only a few games, really. And I've avoided console, big budget console games.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm sort of discovering these games for the first time now. Like, I just started playing Metal Gear Solid 5 yesterday.
Sure.
Off the back of finishing Death Stranding and enjoying it. And finding now that, like, my concept of a Metal Gear game was based off of me playing Metal Gear Solid for the PlayStation when it came out.
Yes, and that was hiding in a box.
That was a huge game at the time. I was young though too, and at the time I played PC games, but not nearly as much as I do now, obviously. And it was just like my memories of that game were fond. I liked it, but just dismissed it as like, it's just a console game that, like, it's probably not, I'm not the demographic for that. I'm older now or whatever. I don't need to play that. And I'm finding playing Metal Gear 5 is awesome. Holy shit, there's so many cool little things in it. When you knock a guy out, there's this system where you attach like this fucking parachute to them and airlift them off of the site. They go fucking flying up in the air and they get returned back to your base.
I forgot about that.
And your dudes like interview them and like assimilate them into your base, like XCOM style or something. Fuck, man. There's like so many cool little mechanics that are just like, that have blown my mind. I didn't realize that it was like an actually really open-ended sort of like sandboxy kind of game. You know what I mean? I just thought it was going to be this really linear cinematic experience.
Stealth in a box experience.
I'm not against.
But it really, the series just morphed.
There's
into,
so much
into
more
that.
To it that I was really surprised by. Like,
it is
really good.
I feel like I've just sort of stumbled upon this whole wealth because coming out August 7th, so it's a week from now, is Horizon Zero Dawn. Which
I'm going to pick that up too. I actually own it on the PlayStation and it's still in its shrink wrap, but I hadn't even opened it.
I just can't bring myself to play on a console. I'm sorry. And so I've been playing Detroit Become Human. Oh, it's really cool.
I've heard it's really good. Yeah, I should probably try that. I'm gonna play an Assassin's Creed game next, like maybe Odyssey or Black Flag or something, because apparently they're quite like good as well. Like, I've just never played
them.
Well,
apparently, I mean, Black Flag is a classic, sort of light-hearted piratey setting with good. It's one of the better ones in the series, apparently. Black Flag, because it's probably the most well-loved one, but they've got like two since that, or three even more since that then. I mean, I played the Assassin's Creed back in the day. I think I played the first couple and then I got a bit bored of them. But I mean, they're the same, like very, very solid, big budget, big hitting console games that have had a lot of work and money and effort put into them. And actually the experience is pretty satisfying. When I'm used to sort of playing so much indie PC kind of crap.
Yeah.
That it's kind of nice to just have this. Like, I played the Titanfall 2 campaign and it was like 6 hours long, or maybe 9 hours long, but it was like completely, like, overwhelmingly cool for that amount of time. You know, the first zone has you like bouncing around these really cool landscapes. The second zone is really cool because you're in like this factory that builds a town, and so you have to like, there's like you're jumping around in this factory that builds. And you're like, why the hell are they, what is this machine, what is this factory building? Why is it building like prefabricated towns? And you realize it's like building these like destructible terrains to train the AI robots in. It's just a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Like, and it's got, and then the third zone is actually like, you're in like this kind of portal style facility and you have a little wrist watch thing that lets you teleport back in time to when the facility wasn't wrecked. So you're basically just jumping, for example, like there'll be a giant flaming wall of fire and like loads of burn stuff, loads of bodies around you.
Right.
And if you just go back in time, it'll just be like a normal room,
be like
loads
all
of dudes doing
and,
science.
Yeah.
And so you just pop into the science room, run through it fine, and then you're on the other side of the fire. And it's like a really cool concept. I mean, sure, these things have been done before, but Titanfall 2 just felt like a really nice experience, and I just had a great time playing it.
Yeah,
I must say.
Yeah, so it sounds crazy. It comes highly recommended. Like, a lot of people love it. It's like
I feel like I just missed so many games. I mean, it's famous for the multiplayer experience and stuff, but I mean, they built in a really cool little campaign with a cool little story. Yeah. And I was like, man, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's nice, but it's funny because we're talking about this stuff like it's brand new because it is to us. But like, you know, some of these games are so old now. People would be like, well, yeah, I mean, we played those games years ago. Like, it's not...
We know they're good. I think it's because... I think also there is this desire, or at least thought, that because something's old or been out for a year, it's kind of old hat, you know, like, I don't know, like, because everything, all of these games came out on console a year ago, and a bunch of people have played them or seen people play them, or it's kind of old news, you know?
Yeah.
And so you always want to feel like, oh, I'll play this new PC game that came out this week rather than something that came out a year ago on console. And so getting over that is part of it, I think.
So this week, so where was it? 2 days ago, I went out.
Wow.
Like I went into London.
On a date.
On a hot date.
For dinner. With some friends of mine. Not a date. Some friends of mine. It was weird because...
Did you bring Mrs. Flax?
No, because it's hard to get a babysitter because of the lockdown and the bubbling and all the rest of it. We've got, you know, the kids and the dog. And I was like, how do we arrange this babysitting thing at the moment? And it feels difficult. So we've sort of been, because she's working from home, she's going out with some of her friends in the area and stuff like that. And I'll stay home. And then this was the first time I've gone out in months.
Your bubbles are touching other bubbles, though.
Very, very, very subtly.
Cross-bubble action.
One time... going out, and the restaurant that we went to, Hawksmoor, it's like a big steakhouse in Covent Garden, excellent food. They had a lot of distancing going on. So for example, not all the tables were full. There's a lot of space between them. And everybody's pretty much keeping their distance. You know, it was good. Everybody's wearing a mask on the transport and everything. It was good. It felt safe, but it was so weird being in London at essentially rush hour on a weekday and it just being completely empty. It was so, so weird. The roads were just not busy at all. The train wasn't busy. Getting into Richmond from Twickenham normally at 5:30 on a fucking Tuesday, that would be hell. No problem. It was so surreal. But it was really nice to walk across Waterloo Bridge and see the city again. It's all like still there, you know, but it just feels like it was so, so far away. So Mrs. F was jealous that I'd been into London and she hadn't in such a long time. So today she's popped into town.
Yeah. Do you think I read a thing that said that this was the longest period of quiet, or the quietest period in recorded history. And it allowed scientists to do a lot of interesting things. Apparently, like a lot of seismic stuff, because there weren't so many roads and trains and lorries and stuff rattling along so much.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of studies they could do, and the ocean was a lot quieter. And so, there's a lot of things that were interesting anyway. But I thought, like, do you think that it is coming back to the office thing? Like, I think a lot of businesses have realized that people can work from home, and maybe that they work just as hard from home, and that a lot of people aren't just going to take the piss.
Absolutely. But it has to be, from any business's perspective, unless you can justify to yourselves, we actually need to have a premises and people on it for whatever reason, whatever that reason is, they must have seen a few things. First of all, I know that people can work from home because I know a ton of people are working from home. Mrs. F was working from home, very long hours, very hard work, all her colleagues the same, doing all the same work that they've been doing and just to the same standard. And in some cases, they found that it's much more easy to get in touch with your colleagues because they're just... You just get them on Zoom. You don't have to go to someone's desk. Oh, they're at lunch. Oh, I'll leave it.
Yeah, we've got a Discord and it's really responsive.
This technology has been around for years.
There's a reason why
not everybody works from home. And the reason
absolutely.
Is because there's lots of other industries that rely on people being out of the house for long periods of time every day, right? Like Flax is saying, you go to a part of London and it's totally empty. All the sandwich shops around there are not going to be making any money.
Right.
All the shops that people would go to at lunchtime aren't going to be making any money. Petrol stations aren't going to be making as much money because nobody's commuting. You know what I mean? There's huge knock-on effects to
it's true.
Everybody working from home.
It is true. But consider this. We don't have people walking around the streets of London selling flowers anymore. We don't have people walking around selling cockles and mussels and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Things do change. And I think... you know,
yeah, that's true. I can't remember the last time I bought right. cockles and mussels.
So it's like, you know, if we just say, well, what about the sandwich shops? I mean, obviously, that in the short term, that's impacting them. And a lot of these small businesses that relied on offices, yeah. that is affecting them greatly. But if the shift comes and says, well, people just order food in, then people have to supply that need. And it can't
just be
one place and one company. So it will always sort itself out eventually.
It will, but it's not a gradual change. This is like a big change for a lot of things at the same time, which is the problem with the impact.
It's
right?
a bit of an uprooting situation.
It is.
You need to replant that plant.
Yeah.
However, I will say that given the environmental impact of commuting on not just the environment, but people's mental health, the cost of it, all that shit. Look at the roads in London at rush hour. This is not normal. This is not peak civilization. This is not stuff that we should protect. It's fucking awful.
It is,
and
yeah.
if we can stop it and have... I mean, I fucking hated commuting. I know Mrs. F does too.
God.
It's horrible.
You tell anyone who enjoys sitting in traffic. Like,
yeah, nobody
does. I think that I was concerned because I have, as someone who has worked from home for a long time, I appreciate that, and you guys know too, that it can be quite, you can go a bit stir crazy if you're home all the time. And I think a lot of people had a very stressful time when they were in lockdown.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's even now, like, and I think working from home can be very, you know, mentally difficult for people. But actually, turns out, looks like on average, maybe just going into work, dealing with the commute, dealing with the office bullshit was actually worse.
Yeah,
maybe that's the stresses of working at home.
Well, there's a lot of factors though. It's what you're used to as well, right? Like, and people, even if a situation is kind of shitty, like having to commute or working in an office with people that you don't like or doing a job you don't like or whatever, you can adapt to all that stuff, and people do all the time, right? And then for something like this to happen and there to all of a sudden be a change to that, something that you're used to or maybe you just gotten used to or whatever, just takes time to get used to the new situation. I think overall, absolutely, like working from home, not having to commute, there's so many benefits to it. Like, people will probably save a lot of money. People will probably be like maybe healthier or have like maybe even better mental health as a result. Like, but I think realistically, I think it's a huge change all of a sudden. Like, the economic impact of just the lockdown in general has been huge. And I think for it to like carry on sort of thing and without people having a chance to sort of change or adapt to it or whatever, like some businesses have for sure. Like, but there's so many that can't or haven't had the chance to. And it's, like,
I just think if we wait and just say, oh, that change will come eventually, it won't. Because there's no impetus, there's no driver for one company to suddenly say, all right, fuck it, everybody work from home.
Yeah.
But from a business perspective, why have a premises in central London that costs a fortune? Like, if you're if you have an office in central London, the cost of that is insane. If you have to build a new skyscraper to stick all your office workers in, the cost of that is insane. And the rent on these places, or the cost of building it, the infrastructure, the upkeep, everything.
I think in a lot of these cases, it's footprint. There's tax implications
like
to all this as well, right? Like, you know, like even... like some really big cities like New York, for example, like when they were running out of money or in bad shape or whatever, they offered tax incentives for building work to be done in places like Manhattan or whatever, and people who bought property were subject to tax incentives and stuff as well, just to sort of boost like the economy, like boost the city's economy or whatever. Like there's a lot of implications like that as well. I mean, a company that makes a ton of money and is as highly financially successful will have a reason for seemingly wasting a lot of money, right? Like, I'm sure they know what they're doing.
Well, a lot of it is prestige. Like, a lot of it is,
I don't know,
we can't have our offices out in the middle of nowhere.
Everything
then
will
we look
have
like nobody's.
Everything will have a huge benefit to it if they're doing it right. Like,
yeah, but the benefit
I think
is
I think it is
very
that.
Rare that they'd just be doing something like, yeah, let's just waste money today. All right, Ron, yeah, let's do that. No problem. We're just going to waste money.
No, but it's not a waste. It's not a waste.
No, but I think it is. I think it is wasting money. It's like having a Rolls Royce and a Rolex, you know.
Yeah, but why do you have those?
Skyscraper.
Why do you have those?
You know, you have them to show off. You have them to be daunting. It's like the whole reason a church used to be, you know, had all this incredibly elaborate extra stuff. You know, you don't need to have massive spires and, you know, go gigantically into sky, but you want to show the power of God and you want to show the power of these companies that they're infallible, that you should buy into them, that you should,
like, if you have guys in as potential clients, you were talking about selling stuff.
Yeah.
If you are selling your services as a company and they come to a few different companies and one of them is located right on the Strand in a really nice offices or in Canary Wharf at the top of a building.
Yeah.
You'll go to those places and think, wow, it was really impressive. If my office is located in Doncaster
or Slough,
in the basement of a nail salon.
No offense to Doncaster, and just beneath a nail salon and next door to a fish and chip shop, and you're like, come in, mind out for the air conditioning, it's a bit rattly. You know, you'd think, who the fuck are these guys? Even if their service is the same, people aren't gonna. It's the reason banks have such impressive facades at the front of a bank. It makes you think this bank is here to stay and trustworthy.
Cast iron.
It's funny though, isn't it? It's like there's degrees of that too, though, because like I feel like that stuff is important for almost like cold call clients, right? Like if you're in a business where you're trying to appeal to like a client that you've never met before based on like no recommendation or whatever, absolutely you have to have like a nice front, right? Like you need to have a nice office and like, you know, professional, like well-presented looking staff and stuff like that.
Yeah, and a big tit secretary.
Sure. But on the other hand, I feel like if you're like in a business like organized crime, for example, like where a lot of your customers
you need an Italian pizza parlor.
Well, no, but like a lot of your customers are coming through from like a recommendation from another person or whatever. You don't care about all that kind of stuff, right? Like you could happily run your big successful business from a fucking boiler room or whatever, and it doesn't matter, you know, because the main thing is that you found this way to make money and the people that want to get involved with you also are interested in making money and they don't care about all that kind of stuff, right? There's degrees.
But you've also got to attract employees. This is the other thing, is that people don't want to work somewhere shit. So if you want to hire good people and you're competing with other businesses doing the same thing, if you can offer a really nice premises in a nice part of London where people will work, or you can offer a basement beneath a nail salon next to a fish and chip shop, people will choose your competitor and the good people will go and work for them. They're not going to say, I just love the company, I'm happy to work in this dump. I disagree. I think premises are actually important for reasons that businesses have to impress people. Employees,
it's about
customers,
imagery.
Image.
Yeah. It's like the government having the big Roman-esque pillars, buildings, you know, the federal buildings in America are all built to in the idea of ancient, you know, what we see as, you know, monuments that last for thousands of years, you know, even though these things were built in, you know, 50 years ago or whatever. Yeah, people want to have the impression of power and have the impression of strength.
Exactly. So if we replace that need to have employees work from home, it doesn't matter where your business is located. The company, I think most companies would say, awesome, we don't have to have this huge cost that we otherwise had to have. I mean, you'd still need an office somewhere, but it could be smaller. Or you could do what a lot of places do and just have an office building that's like, if you need office space, we'll rent it to you on a need basis. Like I worked in a place like that.
I think that's what's happened with the modern tech company. So the modern tech companies have this sort of playground, don't they? They have this idea that there's a campus or Googleplex, Facebook.
Yeah.
And there's loads of different companies all based around one campus.
They have this kind of university attitude towards and social attitude towards their work area. Those guys have huge amounts of money. It definitely used to be that the old school way of doing it was mega, or even it fits in. Like if you're a bank, you have to have a mega tower block in the business center.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas if you're like a tech company, you have to be slightly out on the suburbs and have like a 100-acre, cool playground with a kid's crash and a dentist. And, you know, do you know what I mean? You have like all the stuff for your for your staff. I don't know. I think it's, but that's almost like this thing where you invite someone over or a client and you have this prestige. I think when a company has so much money, they have to, they're almost forced to spend
certain places,
like a football stadium.
Places really depend on it as well, though. Like Flax is saying, like, imagine going to get some, like some representation from like a law firm or something. And like looks really matter in that case, right? Like you want to go to like a really swanky office where people are like well-dressed and professional and stuff. Because if you went to a place and people were just wearing like Hawaiian shorts and fucking flip-flops and stuff, like, hey, dude, what's up?
What's that?
A libel claim? Okay. Like, you know, it's certain things need to be a certain
way,
right?
That's the kind of shit you get in a movie, right? Yeah. You get that lawyer who is like the Big Lebowski type guy,
yeah,
who turns out to be an absolute legend.
Yeah.
And he crushes all these guys in suits with his unorthodox way.
Sure, but you got to take that chance, which a lot of people probably aren't up for, you know? It's like, I just want a will. I don't need you to...
All right, dude, yeah, we'll do a will.
Oh,
you know,
man.
Death is all in the mind, dude. None of us really die, man.
Yeah, there's definitely certain professions where, you know, I don't know if it would work so much like that they're at home all the time, you know, like I wouldn't want to do, for instance, I know we have to now during a pandemic, but like, you know, post-pandemic, you know, if things go back to normal or whatever, I certainly wouldn't expect to be doing a Zoom call to like a lawyer, for example, or like even what? Really a doctor, you know, like I know that like things, it's possible and people do it and stuff, but there's just certain
now,
people.
Now hold the camera between your legs.
There's certain
and bend
people
over
that you want to speak to face to face, and you don't want them to be, you know, not sort of like traditionally presentable, if you know what I mean. Like,
right.
Same with like, I think that attitude could change.
I hope
the younger people would think differently.
I don't know. Maybe just because I'm so conditioned to seeing like my doctor wearing like a shirt and a tie and stuff like that. It'd just be, I don't know, if you went in to see your doctor and he was just like, you know, bumming around, like, you know.
I think a doctor over Zoom is the weird one, I think, for me. But I've most of my contacts with lawyers and advisors and tax people is all done on voice chat and has been for a long time,
sure,
actually, now.
But there's still times where you have to meet these people face to face.
I think the only people I have to meet in real life are dentists and hairdressers. And
one out of two for me. One out of two. I'll go for the dentist on that one.
Dentist as well. Imagine you turn up to your dentist and he's just like fucking Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, and you know.
Or if he did it over Zoom. All right, open your mouth right near the camera. All right, now take the pliers. Grip that tooth at the back. This one. No, that the one next to you. Huh? Yeah. Now inject the needle into your gums. Yeah, that's it. That'd be pretty grim. I'd give it a go.
Well, make sure you floss. So you need to floss more. It's like, oh, no. I reckon the dentist could do it on Zoom. Just tell you to floss a bunch and sort of complain about you for not cleaning your teeth.
Once we have robots, they could just interface with your house robot and he could do the dentistry overseen by the dentist.
God, I don't know. It would have to be very... I don't know if I'd trust...
It's fucking weird, isn't it?
With all that metal in my mouth. I don't like... Certainly don't like
a
robot.
Same with jobs where there's uniforms. Like, you know, like police officers, you know, like people who drive ambulances and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like imagine they, I know there's, obviously there's parts of the police where they don't wear a uniform or whatever, but like.
Well, they have a different uniform, don't they? Or more of a smart uniform.
Yeah, that's right. But like, yeah. It's, I suppose you would see policemen dressed like a bit more casually depending, but like the uniform brings with it some,
it would be weird.
Some like some authority, some things that you just can't really replace. I can't.
Yeah, it's the great leveler. It's a great homogenizer.
Yeah.
For schools, it's good because you know that it makes all the kids equal. You know, the poor kid, the rich kid have to dress the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good thing to have in that environment when otherwise you'd get people being picked on unfairly.
Yeah.
And in the police and stuff like that, wearing the uniform is part. It almost puts you into the rule book. It's almost like you're putting on the rule book that says, you know, you have to behave and act in a certain way, and it makes you, puts you in that frame of mind. So yeah, it obviously is very important to have these things.
We've had some fake police around our area lately.
Really?
What?
Yeah. So one of the things that Twickenham is very well known for,
rugby,
is bike theft.
Bike theft.
We're like sadly not. We're like the bike theft
that's
capital
what I
of
think
London.
Of when I hear Twickenham.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's what you should think about. We are literally the bike theft capital of London. It's this area is rife with bicycles and therefore with bike thieves. So more bicycles, more bike thieves. But anyway, there's a lot of them around, and I know that one lived on our road.
Right.
Oddly enough, and she
a bike thief.
Yeah, she stole 50 bicycles.
Jeez,
before the police were finally like, "All right, we're going to have to lock you up for this." And I was like, "Wow!" So it took 50 bikes before
they arrived on bikes to lock her up.
I hope so.
And then they took her away on a bike. They were like on the back of a tandem. That would
well,
be
they just stick her on the tandem, handcuffed to the. You better pedal, or you're only making it worse.
You gotta build a case, though. You gotta chase the money. You know what I mean? You can't just turn up to her house and just arrest her with no evidence or whatever. Like if you're gonna bring a case to court and bring that first thing, you gotta make sure they go away for a long time, right?
So yeah.
You
gotta they call her a bunch of times.
You gotta get
like
the wiretaps in
and cautioned and all the rest of it, like the wire, but for bike thieves.
You gotta get the wiretaps in. You gotta do the surveillance and stuff.
I'm sure they had lots of pictures of her on record, and she'd probably been arrested two or three times for nicking bikes.
Hey,
she was a heroin addict.
Yo.
She was a heroin addict, so she was known.
Yo, Jenny, you done that thing? You get that thing?
Yeah, I got it for the 50th time. Got another one.
I think they're on to me finally.
They might be listening. Use code words.
So these fake coppers turned up just wearing they were wearing regular clothes, but with like a vest, like a sort of white. Not white, but one of those sort of high-vis vest that said police on it.
Right.
Two blokes, and they knocked on my neighbor's door, and they're like, yeah, we're just in the area to check about bikes stuff, so if you could show us your bikes to make sure they're locked up, then, you know, that'll help.
Yeah, well, that's a good one, isn't it? That's like, you know, like sometimes...
So they were fake police.
So they do that with fake firefighters as well, don't they? So that they can get into your house and scope it out, but pretend that they're looking at your fire alarms and stuff.
I wouldn't be on the outlook for fake. If a policeman came to me, I'd just keep shitting myself.
You just say, "Can I see your warrant card?" Or you call, is it 111 or 101?
I don't
want to
be rude like that. I'm not going to be a rude guy. I'm not suspicious.
I would not let somebody into my house with like that wasn't already organized sort of thing. If somebody turned up and said, we're going to come in and look at something or whatever, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to phone your station and just make sure that you're here for that reason.
I don't even
they
let
know that you're
the,
here and
the
stuff.
Meter guy in.
Yeah.
I don't even let the meter guy in. I'll be like, what do you need? He's like, the readings from your electricity meter. I was like, all right, wait here. And I'll get a chair up and look up at the thing and I'll read it to him. But I'm not letting him in.
No.
It's a stranger.
Yeah.
You never let a stranger in your
house.
Exactly. Never.
The only people that are coming into my house are people that I've phoned specifically and said, can you come into my house? And I'm expecting them. But like if somebody...
Because then there's a record.
If somebody turns up and says, I need to come into your house, there's no fucking way you're coming in my house.
Like, damn right.
You liar.
God, this reminds me of something that happened to me this week. So
somebody came into your house.
No. I was walking along down Bristol Harbour, and there's this little bit where there's a little sort of pedestrianized road, and it was fairly busy, and there were quite a few people walking up and down, most of them wearing masks, some with the kids running around and stuff. Anyway, it's not supposed to be any cars on there. This sort of car had driven down, and it was sort of if it happens, then, you know, you're just going to put up with it, right? Even though he's not really supposed to be there. And he was like, and it was sort of, it was, he was sort of jerking forward and revving the engine and like beeping his horn at people, just being a real asshole.
Right.
He sort of, I think I just sort of ignored it and walked on. And then he like drove up almost like right up behind me and sort of beeped me. And so I walked around to the driver's window and I just said in his face, fuck you, you miserable old fuck.
Did you?
I said that straight in his face. And he was this sort of sour-faced old man. And he just gave me this, he sort of put his foot on the brake very subtly as if to stop and like pull up. and stops as if he was going to get out of his car. And so I took this sort of step back, you know, assuming he was going to... So I'd kind of said my piece. I wasn't going to continue.
Yeah.
I've said my piece. Fuck you.
I sort of took my step back and I walked between these. There's these little bollards, you see. So he couldn't have driven his car through the bollards, right?
Nice.
So I knew he wasn't going to...
Right.
In the back of my mind... So,
he's going to run
all,
you over.
Well, it was a very snap decision. And I didn't really... I sort of I lost control of myself a bit, really. Because I don't know why. You know, sometimes that happens.
It does happen. Especially if someone's been a twat and you've seen it. And
it sort of triggered
it's,
me.
It's
and I
really
sort of,
annoying.
It was almost like he did it once and I thought, I'm not going to say anything. And he did it again and I was like, I'm not going to say anything. And then it's like, sometimes that happens, right? Like classically... You know, I know someone's being noisy out the window and they're like, okay, if they're noisy again or doing something they shouldn't be doing again, I'll say something. And then you don't, okay, because that's the second time. And then the third time, you're like, well, I didn't say anything last time. I'm going to say something now. And it takes, I'm not really that, I'm feeling a bit anxious about it now, but it was this moment that triggered me. And I was instantly like on edge after I'd done it. And I was worried that he was going to get out of his car and chase me or something. But he was this old fucking guy and I knew he wasn't going to. You know, if he came for me, I could just sort of
run,
keep at a distance.
Right. Were you close to any large bodies of water? You could have dealt with
well
in traditional fashion.
Well, anyway, I thought that was an interesting moment
right.
that happened at the weekend.
So did he just drive off?
He just drove off.
Did
yeah.
you do a double take and you realized, oh shit, it's my personal trainer after all these years? Hey. Fuck your mother,
he was
too.
Just trying to get my attention. What if he went around the window and said, oh, sorry, I just wanted to say I love the Triforce podcast and I have a tiny penis. You'd be like,
wow. Yeah, you imagine that. Imagine you'd been really rude to somebody and then they're like, I'm your biggest fan.
That does happen. Lovely people do stop me on the street and say that, but they're never grey-haired old men
no?
who are driving like knackered old fucking Fiestas or whatever down the wrong way in a pedestrian
right.
street. They're usually not those kind of people.
What I want to know is, I got a fucking ticket for going accidentally into a bus lane for 2 seconds when I was in Bristol. How's this lad not getting booked for that? He's going down a pedestrian area the wrong way.
Maybe he does all the time. It's like the kind of person who has to be arrested a couple of times before the police come around and find all the bikes.
He's probably like, yeah. his car's probably like Kramer's. Like you probably open the glove box and there's just like a billion tickets come spilling out. You know, he's like, yeah. like some serial like fucking offensive
these
driver.
These assholes do exist.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're out
there's
there.
Plenty of them.
They are out there.
It's the same kind of people who... flaunt the rules. Like I don't know, like there's a little bit of people flaunting the mask rules at the moment. And I get it. Like, you know, it's okay. You have to wear a mask in shops, but not if you're eating, not if you're having a takeaway, not if you're in a queue for a coffee or any of these other. There's all these... It's a bit weird.
It's not really... really a lot of clarity coming out of the leadership.
But I'm happy. I think in general, like getting people to wear less masks, wear masks and stuff more and be more aware of their health is probably going to mean that lots less other infectious disease. And that's good because, you know, I probably would have had a cold by now or something anyway this summer. Someone would have given me something, you know?
Do you think it's going to affect our ability to fend off things like colds?
I don't think that's how it works, is it?
Really,
I don't think we
no.
build up that much immune. I think getting something
I think you're better,
and then getting immune I to think, it is like not going to make you less likely to get the one next one. I think every cold virus is different, right?
Because they say
every
that
if flu
the
virus is different.
Kids that aren't exposed to like dust and dirt and germs early on in their life tend to be the ones that develop things like asthma and tend to get sicker. Because their body, they haven't exercised that part of their body sufficiently. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, but I don't. But if that was the case, we'd have this sort of period of time where you'd have to be like, okay, it's time for you to get another sickness, Mr. Forsyth. You haven't had your yearly dose of a cold this time.
Maybe
you know.
Once you're an adult, your body's already just like, we know what we're doing.
Yeah, once you're not a toddler anymore, I think your immune system's usually developed. And if you eat properly and make sure you do a little bit of exercise, I think you usually be as good as you're going to get.
Not only that, but washing your hands properly is a huge thing.
I always do. I don't understand why people don't.
Well, they
I'm
don't.
Not even sure the old snake venom thing's true. Is that like an urban myth?
What,
can people
build
make
up
themselves immune to snake venom over time?
I don't
Cary
know.
Cary Elwes did in Princess Bride. He developed an immunity to Iocane powder.
I want to know if that's true.
Yeah.
What other things can you do to make yourself immune? Oh, certainly people who drink a lot can build up a tolerance to alcohol and drugs, I guess, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I don't think illnesses, sicknesses work in the same way.
I mean, when you first start smoking, you get a head rush from like the nicotine and all the rest of it. But with time, you need more.
Yeah.
Like to get the same.
Your body wants to get back to that point where you're getting a head rush off the first one.
I think that's just damaging your serotonin receptors or whatever, though. I think they've been desensitized and damaged. I think that's less to do with building up an immunity and more like sanding off sharp edges of your brain.
Oh, by the way, quick Huel update. I've been on it for a week now.
Right.
Okay, how's the diarrhea?
None.
How have your stools been in general? I'm
pooping less. Right. I'd say once a day.
Right.
And
wait, you pooped more than once a day before?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Jeez. Not every day, but sometimes. Yeah. Okay. And I'd say generally I'm a morning pooper. You know what I mean? I get up, have my cup of tea, and then maybe 20 minutes, half an hour after that, I'm ready to poop.
The cup of tea or coffee usually triggers
the trigger. Yeah, and nicotine as well is a big... Yeah.
It happens when you're getting older. You become more regular.
I don't think anything triggers my poop. Like, I'm fairly regular, like kind of sort of the same time every day. And then some days I go and I don't have a poop, you know, like... Sometimes there's like a day between or whatever.
Do you notice that? You're like, well, I haven't pooped today.
Thanks to this conversation have I noticed that I didn't poop yesterday. But I mean, it happens. But pooping twice a day, that's like pretty rare for me. It has happened, but it's pretty rare. Like,
I don't know what the right, I think both of them are normal. I think probably once.
That's a lot of waste, like you're pooping twice a day. Like, you,
yeah,
a lot
think
of fucking
about
waste.
But honestly, with the Huel, it's once a day, it's fine. And then,
well, it's to do with the fiber, though, isn't it? Like, so I was talking to, who was I talking to? I was talking to someone in the office, I won't say their name. And they said to me, oh, you know, I've been having a bit of diarrhea. And I was like, oh, God, you need more fiber in your diet. And they said to me, but I eat fruit and fiber every morning. And I was like, that's like the most fibrous thing there is. How could you have a problem with fiber and be eating like basically just cardboard?
I think if you eat too much fiber, maybe you poop more. Because it's just...
Oh.
I mean, I think that might be
I read a thing that said you literally can't eat too much fiber. I don't know where... That might be bollocks.
Was that on the side of a box for fruit and fiber?
Fruit and fiber, maybe.
This is the age-old thing, though, isn't it? I don't think you can trust people's claims to, like, to diet and stuff like that when it comes to this sort of stuff, right? Because...
You have to know your own
body. No, but it happens all the time. Like, hi, I've got crippling diarrhea, and it's full of blood, and it hurts really bad and stuff. Oh yeah, what's your diet like? Perfect. I don't know what could be wrong. All right. Okay, thanks for that.
Oh, I see. And then you don't go any further than that. And you're like, well, what is perfect? And they're like, well, I wake up with a liter of ice cream.
Yeah. It's like something is definitely causing this. I'm sure it's something that you're doing. I hate to break it to you, but you know what I mean? Like, but that's cool. If your diet's perfect, don't change anything. Just live with diarrhea forever. That's cool too, I guess. Like, it's just like, it's such a weird
I didn't know what to say then when he said that he ate like fruit and fiber every morning. Because I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but that's got a lot of fiber in it, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's in the name. I mean, I know how these guys like can lie to you and stuff. But what else was I supposed to say? Was I supposed to say, oh yeah, try replacing your lunch with a dry Weetabix? Like, I don't know. How else do you get more
fiber?
Well,
you can get diarrhea from being dehydrated as well, right? Maybe he's...
Can you?
Maybe he's a bit dehydrated. Yeah, you can.
I thought it was the opposite.
No,
yeah, that's the opposite.
No, I think when you're dehydrated, you can get some diarrhea as well. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm just...
I don't think that's true.
None of us are. What we need to do is get a doctor on Zoom and ask
him. Can you get... diarrhea.
Please do not message us, guys.
Yeah, we don't want to know about all this.
We don't want to know that. We want to know about where you are listening to the Triforce podcast.
If the body loses a substantial amount of fluids and salts and they are not quickly replaced, for example, by drinking, the body starts to dry up or get dehydrated. Severe dehydration can cause death. The usual causes of dehydration are a lot of diarrhea and vomiting.
Yeah, because that dehydrates you.
Yeah.
I don't think dehydration causes diarrhea. Right. I think it's the opposite, the other way around. Yeah.
That's some medieval medicine
right
there.
People who die of like cholera and stuff.
Diarrhea can cause dehydration, which means the body lacks enough fluid to function properly. Dehydration is particularly dangerous.
That would be a medieval doctor. The problem here is too much water.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the diarrhea is.
You're going to need to rub some mud on all around the hole of your dick.
Eat this pound of salt and lie in a bed of sand in the sun. For 2 days.
What we'll do is we'll get, you've got too much liquid in you, so we'll get some of the blood out of you with these leeches. We'll cut your wrists open and we'll just put you in the warm bath.
Okay. What causes diarrhea? Many viruses cause diarrhea, including norovirus link and rotavirus link. Gastroenteritis is a common cause of acute diarrhea. Bacterial infection. Several types of bacteria can enter your body through contaminated food or water and cause diarrhea.
I guess that's still happening, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It could be something as simple as if they drink from the same water bottle every day if it's not clean. It could be a myriad of things that they're doing as part of their routine that seem harmless.
It's probably,
but they actually need to stop them.
Diet is probably the last thing that you should really look at when it comes to diarrhea, because it's more like a virus thing, I think.
Oh, right. Well, he said it was light diet. It wasn't.
Sometimes
like
it can be
heavy.
An imbalance in the humors. You've got to keep the humors balanced.
What? Right. Okay, so hang on. So it wasn't...
You need to lick a newt.
It wasn't full diet. What is your guy's sort of line that crosses where it's like 100% full diarrhea?
I'm having to run back and forth to the toilet. I think I'm finished.
Have to go back.
Like,
as soon
it's
as
an emergency
pooping,
every time I need to go.
And it just... And it absolutely sprays out of your ass as well, right?
Yeah.
It's not just like...
And it hurts. Like, you get those cramps.
Yeah.
And you shiver and it's like
it's not just like a bit
horror.
Runny or like... It doesn't look like a chocolate mousse or whatever. This is like pure water.
This is
right?
Literally just a gusher.
I think a chocolate mousse is okay once
gusher,
in a while.
Yeah. That's my sort of ideal diarrhea.
I think it's okay
to
have like a chocolate mousse, but if it's like always
a chocolate mousse,
I think I think a chocolate mousse is pretty normal, but like anything
a
shout
out to
more.
Everyone listening to this whilst eating their chocolate mousse. Have fun with that.
I don't want to get too personal, but I don't know what I've been doing recently, okay? Maybe it's just been a combination of like good hygiene, decent enough diet, bit of exercise or whatever.
Low stress, you know, surrounded by a loving family.
My poops have been
sunshine,
fantastic.
Lollipops, rainbows.
Like they just come,
fantastic
they just
poops.
Slide out
so,
like,
so
a, like a torpedo in the tube of a submarine. They just slide right out.
Wow.
No problem. I go to wipe my ass and I didn't even need to, honestly. It's clean.
No, that's called a ghost poo.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's not. That's called...
No, that I think that's a ghoster, actually.
A ghost poo is one where you go to the toilet and poo, but then you look in the bowl and there's nothing and you wipe and there's
what
nothing.
What is
it's like it wasn't even there.
Poop.
Yeah.
What is it? Ghost poop? Ghost poop.
The one that slips down.
The kind
disappears.
Where you feel like the poop come out, but there's no poop in the toilet. A clean poop. The kind where you poop it out, see it in the toilet, but there is nothing on the toilet paper. Its most noticeable trait are the skid marks on the bottom of the toilet. Yeah, that's true, actually. That happens.
It's like a
that
footprint.
That, I prefer the skids to be on the bottom of the toilet than...
Under the water.
In my ass on the toilet paper, or even worse... You know,
I'm glad we got around to this eventually.
You know,
come back to our roots.
Every once in a while when you're walking around and you're just like, all of a sudden your inner ass gets really itchy and you're like, oh shit.
I hate an itchy ass.
It's just like, there's probably like a bit of poop in there causing this itch, right? Because what else is going to cause the itch on your inner ass?
A tiny tear. Could be a tiny tear.
Could
on
just
the
be
inside
like one really small molecule of poop just like causing the irritation, you know?
My dog, my dog suffers with this. She does a poop, then there's a tiny bit more to come out and she's like scuttling around in that poop stance that dogs have. She's trying to walk because she's like, I know I'm nearly finished, but this
when they,
tiny
like,
bit of poop.
They pull their asses on the ground like to scratch it.
That's if they have worms. They do that.
They do that when they have worms?
God. Yeah.
I did that the other day. I don't think I have worms.
Well, you just scratched your ass on the ground.
Yeah.
You got worms now, buddy.
You should try doing that, actually. I think they should do that as like a yoga move or something because that shit is hard to pull off. Like it's really hard to put your ass on the ground and pull your ass like that.
So I don't think yoga is about finding moves that are hard to pull off.
No, but I feel like if you're going to do yoga, you might as well do something at the same time, you know, like get more bang for your
buck.
Well,
yoga is all about
that. Yeah, okay. I'm working on my yoga. but I'm also able to itch my, you know, scratch my inner ass at the same time.
Do you think that they sit around and come up with new moves for yoga? Like,
It's a big industry now, so you get a lot of people who are involved in it will, like, do their own
Who are just sitting around coming up with new yoga moves. Yeah. No, the way it works is that you do like a yoga position, and then there is a more advanced version of that where you can tap into other muscles.
Right. What I'm saying is, are people literally like, is there some kind of a
think tank
yoga
somewhere.
Retreat somewhere where they're like, we need to exercise this muscle. We need a yoga style move for this.
You're going to have a level 5 clearance for this. They are working on a new move in there that is strictly top secret. You cannot know what the...
You've heard of downward dog, now itchy butt dog. We're working on it for several years. Right. Namaste.
It's a top secret yoga bunker in the middle of...
Farting is like a quite common thing in yoga classes.
It is very common.
You just have to accept. You just if it happens to you, just don't worry about it.
Well, I went to a hot yoga class a few years ago. You ever done hot yoga?
Yeah, no. I have. It was horrible.
Horrendous. The guy was like, I'm sorry, the heaters are broken. We can't turn them down. So they're like at max. But he's like, but you'll all be all right. And after it was like, I thought it was a 1 hour session. The 1 hour sessions I could do. This was an hour and a half session. That extra
hour. I can't even do half an hour.
Oh my God. It was so rough. Like, I'm not kidding. That my yoga mat, the water was just pouring out of me. Like, I was drinking. I had to refill my bottle twice.
Shit,
Did you have diarrhea when you got home?
No, I didn't. I was fine. Oh, right. But it was literally, the water was, I could see it just pouring off me. It was like that gif of the guy sweating, Key and Peele, you know. Yeah. It was literally like that. And I looked around and there's all these, it was me and a bunch of ladies, basically, and one other dude. The dude was like stripped to the waist, ripped. I was like, whatever, dude. I'm in this baggy old t-shirt. And I'm doing my poses and all the rest of it. And the instructor's constantly having to adjust me. And I was like, you know, she's like,
stop
no, further
me.
Down. Yeah. So, but it was so hard. It was horrific. And then I had to cycle home and I got home and I was just like dead. And Mrs. F was like, I know that was an hour and a half
what
and I didn't tell you.
What happened to you?
She booked it. She was like, it was a free session. I could book you. She's like,
She tortured you.
Yeah. She was like, I should have told you it was an hour and a half. I said, yeah, you should. Yeah, you should, because I wouldn't have gone. Oh my God, it was horrible.
That probably put you in good shape for the next like year, though. That probably
just that one
like
session, yeah.
If I was a better man, I would do yoga every week or a couple of times a week because it is super chill. And honestly, some of the ladies there are in amazing shape.
You need to get like a beer hat, but fill it with Huel, but make it voice activated. So you're just like, all right, everybody, now do a downward dog, okay. Huel just like dispenses into your mouth.
Oh no! Oh,
fuck. When I got the Huel delivery, it comes with the Huel sort of shaker. And it's like a big plastic thing with Huel in massive letters on the side.
Right.
And it came with a T-shirt, which I am wearing a fucking Huel T-shirt. I gave that to my daughter. And I was like, I wondered if I turn up to the yoga with my Huel, I'd fit right in, you know, if I'd lost a bit of weight.
Yeah,
but first, I'd be like, yeah, I'm on the Huel doing the yoga. How hot is it? You're not hot enough. I want to be fucking diarrhea and out of my eyeballs at the end of it.
I don't think they would have like the hat with the tubes. It would be like one of those harmonica one man band things when you'd snort it off of that.
You're snorting my heel.
Yeah.
The water's a waste, man. I just IV it straight up the nose.
Yeah.
Straight up the nose.
Fuck.
Oh, it gets it straight into the bloodstream.
So someone on stream said that people call Huel protein, which I thought was quite
protein.
I like that.
That's protein. Nice. Yeah, yeah. Oh. Hey, you were on Pitch Please last time they did a Pitch Please, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess who's doing Pitch Please?
Oh, baby.
Today.
It's fun.
Pitch Please our sister podcast about gaming. Where you pitch your ideas for games,
yes.
And they talk about whether or not they're possible. It's a great podcast. It's on all good platforms.
I feel like I'm going to be a bad guest, though, because I'm just going to pitch the same game that I've been banging on about for like a year now on stream.
Bro Sim Alaska, right?
Yeah, that's
Dude
the
Sim
one.
Alaska.
That's
Dude
the
Sim.
One, yeah.
So They're very cool. They know about game development. So they'll be like, they'll suggest stuff or what's the hook or this, that, and the other. They really liked my game,
right?
Which was really nice. So I was happy with that.
Okay.
But it was a lot of fun. They're all lovely lads, aren't they? So
yeah.
It's super fun. Yeah, super fun. Well, there you go. That's a little advert for the end of the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll see you
next time.
Bye.
Next time. All right. Bye.
Bye.